You know, in going through the 4th to 6th chapter of Genesis, and there's, quote, 70 names there, end of quote, which is an awful lot of names. Generally speaking, what we try to have done in the past, we found a pattern within it. Doesn't mean it's exact meaning of what we're thinking it could be, but it's nice to know something about why they are named the way they are named in the sequences in which, or the series in which they're done in a certain order. Now, sometimes we in our world, we think a bunch of names is just a bunch of names. And we don't need to know much about them. That's true, because we don't call each other by any of these names, except there are very few, maybe, 2 or 3. But at the very same time, there comes this problem in a sense of why is it when we look at the book of Genesis, and we have done this before in the very beginning with the sons of Cain, we found a certain pattern of the names, meaning, and all the way down to the very conclusion of the last name. It was very fascinating to know that there was hope in the line of Cain, but you would not necessarily see it. So what I want to do today, so last week, I think I had got a lot of people confused with a bunch of names. Now, generally, I don't hand out papers, because I'm one of these people that says, I'd like for you people to look and research yourself. However, 70 names is an awful lot of names. So I made a bunch of copies of the names. All it is the names, and a brief meaning of what a one line, one word, sometimes 3 words, what they mean. Now, does it mean these names have a certain name that reflects the Messiah or the actions of the Messiah, but sometimes reflects the action of the Father himself, that is the creator of heaven and earth, because he said something very powerful in the prophets. He says, in Bereshit, I told you the end of the story. And so we're coming now to close to the end of the book of Genesis. We are in 46th chapter, and it'll be 47, 48, 49, and 50. And there's certain names, again, that show up for a purpose. Now, we're trying in our world, because we live in a physical world, we try to identify, quote, the reason why these group of people, the way they are, because related to that person. Well, that's not necessarily true. And, you know, I'm glad that I'm not related to some of my ancient ancestors. That's not a positive thing in the past. So I don't relate myself to them. I don't conduct myself to them. I don't even think like them. So we have to stop and think about what is it, why God put names down for, because names have a direct meaning of something. Now, sometimes we look at names and we look at just the 12 tribes and they're listed by their ages. In this particular chapter, they're not listed by their ages. They're listed by the mothers. And the ones that they had in series. Now, Leah's got the most. She has an awful lot in her line. And the next one, of course, is Leah's handmaid. And the third one is Rachel. And then the fourth one is Rachel's handmaid. Now, God arranged it that way for a reason. Now, sometimes I don't have the answer for everything. I'm just sitting in the dark and hoping I understand what's going on. So let's briefly kind of go over these names, if you don't mind. And the first one, of course, is Reuben, which means, you got it written down there, behold a son. Then the second one is Hanuk. That's ha. It's hard. I wrote there in Hebrew, the word in Hebrew, their name in Hebrew. And it shouldn't start with an H, it should start with, in a sense, a CH, or a hard sound of Hanuch, which means dedicated one, or the one that's dedicated. And the third one, is Fa'ul, which means basically distinguished one. We talked about this before. It's a pattern here. Behold a son, a dedicated one, a distinguished one, and Ha, Cheh, Chasaron, surrounded by a wall. And the last one is my vineyard. So we have a picture here that God wants us to see and understand about the names, not the men, but the names that comes from this particular lady. You remember Leah had poor eyesight. Remember she couldn't see very well? Yes.
I'm sorry again. These first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are from Reuben.
No. Not from Reuben at all. There are Reuben's sons are listed here, yes. But I'm not looking at who is whom, who bore who. I'm looking at the ones that ancestries of Leah only. I don't care about who bore who. That's not the subject matter, okay? It's the names I'm trying to explain. It's the names that are very fascinating. And God does not waste his time on names. You remember the New Testament? In the book of Revelations? He has a name for each and every one of us that is not the same as anybody else's name. Now, you and me, you and I should say, we couldn't possibly hold that information in our brain, can we? We also know that he says he has all the stars. He has them not only numbered, he has a name for each and every one of those stars. Wow, that's quite a brilliant memory, right? So we're looking at this thing and we're saying, okay, now God, you have done the book of Revelation, Genesis, in order us to see a pattern. We see patterns after patterns after patterns after patterns after patterns from the very beginning of Genesis chapter 1 all the way through, including up to this point, including the pattern happened to Joseph. God set it in motion, a pattern of how he, God, runs the things. And I said before, that says that Yahshua said, by the way, the book of the scriptures, it's talking about what Jacob did. Talk about how Isaac treated his wife, right? It's talking about the wonderful man named Abram. Or is it talking about God's actions in the life of Abraham? God's actions in the life of Sarah? God's actions in the life Isaac, and the life in Rivka's life. It's God's actions involved, and he is taking full and complete, responsibility for what took place in their life, including all the way down to Joseph, when he said, now I know God sent me in advance. Don't blame yourself for what you did to me. It is God who did it to me. And we don't like it when God does that, because we like to make sure somebody else is at fault. That's our human nature, right? If things don't work out for me, my boss did it to me. Or my wife did it to me. Or my teenage kid did it to me. You know, we always do this because we want to make sure we come up ahead. We have a good ground reason to be mad, good ground reason to be irritated, good ground reason to find fault, because we don't want to see the actions of God. Because we don't like the actions of God. When it looks so horribly negative, did it not look horribly negative in the life of Joseph? But God instituted every action. Now we say, oh, it's just a fulfilled prophecy. No, not according to Yahshua. It's to tell us about the Son of God. Right? So we come all the way down now, we go over here, and it's this, that the Son was born, and then behold, the Son, and then the dedicated one, the distinguished one, surrounded by a wall, the wall is my vineyard. my vineyard very fast than anything. And what is a vineyard, you know? It means God has a vineyard. Book of Joshua talked about a vineyard, right? Must be God's, right? Now the next one is Shimeon, or Simon, means herd, or God actually means God heard, literally speaking. God heard, because that's why she named him. God heard, okay? What did God hear? He heard a time. He heard, and then he set a time for his actions, or set a time for his plan. That's what the name, next name means. Having a day or a time. There was a time of the Lord. I want to say our time of God. That God is now instituting something, or God's going to, this is the time he's going to do it. What's he going to do? He's going to do something with his right hand. The very next name. You see that pattern? Next one down, we went to this yesterday. And he, the right hand, will establish something, or he, the Father, will establish something. So an action being taking place here. The names of the men tells us things. Now, God names every star. He's going to give it a name to tell us something about him, not about the star. You understand that? It makes simplicity thing. And that's why we're going through these names. I'm not saying all name. I got it figured out. I don't have them all figured out, but we'll go through that. And the next one after his right hand, it's going to do something. The next word is ohal. Ohad means to unite. The right hand is going to unite. How would the right hand unite? Well, it draws inwardly to the bosom, bringing people into the bosom, or bringing them in. That's what he's going to do. The next one is that he will establish. And this is a very unusual word. It's tante, or it can mean the color of port wine, or a color of wine, basically. That the word port wine is a word that's translated wrongly. It just basically means the tanning, or the color of wine when it's being processed. All right? Well, wine is representing of what? Okay, let's get more specific what Yahshua said it was. More specific. His what? The what? Covenant. This blood is the new covenant. Maybe you don't put old wine, you don't put new wine in old wineskins. Because they blow up. Can't take it anymore. So you have to have a new inward and new outer life. Inward life and an outer life. Then the Shaul means the desired one. And the desired one is going to do something very unusual. It's going to join something together. That's what Leah, how many people did not know before you knew this that this guy named Levi, he makes jeans. Right? He made jeans with a bunch of rivets. Right? We got to, everybody knows the name of Levi, especially most men, especially in the Western United States, because, he didn't have any thread. So he hammered them together with the rivets, and he said, oh, it's Levi. And everybody bought Levi jeans. Levi, Levi, Levi. And now it's a big, huge name, right? But his name means what? To join. Now, we know why Malaya said this and called him that, but why did God choose it? We think, oh no, Leah did all the naming. Well, no, God named them. All right? God named them by and through these women for a reason. And their sons began to name their kids for a reason. Because God wanted that name remembered. And then this other one is Gershon, being the exiled one, the one that's driven out. Now you join something together, what happens to the others? Okay, let's put it this way. If you had biblically speaking, right? Can two walk together if they don't agree? Right. So the one that's drawing you in unto the Father, you agree with him. You that don't agree with God, you're out. That's the simplicity of the whole matter. And so this is a Levite, quote, end of quote, that has to do something. He's going to have to separate those that have been drawn in and take those that are not and exile them, put them out, depart from what God has had in mind. The next son is named Kohath, which means what? It says assembly. Now, one's joining. What does assembly mean? In a, let's say, modern terminology. We call ourselves assembly, right? Okay. But we have a name, don't we? What's the name of it?
Fellowship.
Fellowship. All right. When you assemble together, you assemble together for fellowship reasons. You're joining yourself. Another name later on down the line is almost identical to the very same thing. But we'll keep on going down here. And the next one's bitter. Why would bitter be involved? It's a hard one to explain, right? Is anyone who has an answer?
If I was exiled.
If you were exiled and not part of the assembly, you'd be a little bitter. Okay. What does that do with God? It's what?
A temptation.
A temptation. Okay. They're bitter toward God, not bitter toward people. That's reality of life, right? Now, you don't have to accept this. I'm just trying to figure out why God lists all these names. Now, the next one is Yehuda. I've talked about this before. And you always use the name praise, but that's not what the name even comes close to meaning, right? It's got a yod there, which has nothing to do with praise. It has to do with a hand. When a name begins with a yod, it generally means a masculine thing is doing something. Not a feminine thing, a masculine thing. And so a hand is being held out. Somebody's holding a hand out. What's he holding his hand out for? To get something? Or to give something? Who's going to be doing the giving? If God's involved with giving something, what is God going to give? So far we have a very positive approach coming down. You see, as the names start showing up. What is it that God is going to give? I am the way, I am the life. He's going to give life. Who's going to give life? God's going to give life. By and through whom? His son. Hands out. Not to receive something, but to give something. And the Apostle Paul says, life is a free gift. You don't have it. You don't own it. You don't belong to it. You don't have possession of it. Unless God gives you it. When God gives you it, then it's yours. According to Apostle Paul. And now the other two sons are very strange. One says, awake. Now in this handout, something is to be woken up. Awake. What does that mean? Okay. Who's asleep?
Our spirit.
How will that, who will wake up that person? He's going to wake him up. This guy's dead. He died before they went into the promised land. Lo, he's listed amongst the 70. He's dead. And his brother, right behind him, Onan is the strong one. Oh, but they're dead. They didn't enter into the promised land. But they're listed in the ones of the 70 that entered into. How could they be listed as the ones that entered into Egypt? Do you have an answer? It's a puzzlement, right? Why are these two dead men, long since been dead, why are they listed amongst those that are entering into the land of Egypt?
Because their ancestors weren't there.
They had no kids. They all died. They had no kids. Gives you something to think about, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get there. I just want you to think about this thing because I find it very puzzling why two dead men are listed and the monks that entered into this list amongst the 70 that entered into Egypt. The key thing is enter into Egypt. Who entered in there? What is Egypt? The next one is a petition. What's that petition mean? You got one's waking up or being woken up, and that one's being strong, and now the third son is a petition. What's the third son petitioning? Or is God petitioning something? Is God handing them something? Is God asking for something from them? This is unusual wording, right? Why are they listed? Yes.
Why did and Onan enter into Egypt when they were dead?
Why were they?
Yeah, what was the answer to that question?
We'll get there.
Oh.
Just be patient on that one. Because the end of the story tells you everything. The end of Genesis tells you the story of what it's all about. Which you are in the world right now participating in it. You are part of this. Not them. You are. How do you relate to all this stuff? Means absolutely nothing, right? Keep on going down with the names. Where am I at? Oh, and then the breach. What is a breach? Something is separating. Something is breaking apart. Petition's been handed down, and now there's a breaking of something apart. What's being broken apart? What's being broken up? What's being separated? Put it that way. What's being divided? One of the names is very fascinating. It uses the word divided. Why is this being divided for? Why is there a break for? Oh, because the two babies, you know, right? No. This God is telling us something through this break. What does the break picture? A separation. So something is broken off. Has anything that God had once said, it's one, united as one, and then he broke it apart? The nation of Israel. Why would he do that for? Just to prove he's God? Now, there has to be this coming back together again sometime. Is it listed? Well, I hope we get to find out. Let's go on down the line. And it says a rising. Now, what does rising mean? Sorry, what? Back from the dead, okay. So something has this petition being handed out. The petition has to do with something about a breach, and then it has to do with a rising. Something rising up that was once down, and now it's up. So what did the petition? What was the petition? I will not remember your sins anymore. I will not remember the transgressions anymore. I will not remember the iniquities anymore. I broke them off. Spiritually speaking, I cut the foreskin off your heart. It will never return. That's a prophecy in the very name itself. And then we have this Hezron again. We'd be surrounded by a wall. So that's that rising, you're surrounded by a wall. Nothing cannot break that wall down now. And next one is to spare us, to spare one. The one that's spared, meaning to have compassion upon. One he's going to give compassion to rather than, throw them away, because he had now got rid of that wall. The very name, Issachar, is really, really unusual name. And it basically means, it does mean recompense, or to be buying back. Something has to be bought back. Simple as that. So odd and unusual name for a man, right? Or for anybody. By the way, your name means buy back. Buyback time. Payback time. For something that was lost. Alright? Now the next, his son was called Worm. We went through that last week, remember? What is a worm? What is a worm? Okay, let's put it in different words. In Psalms, he says, talk about the Messiah, when he says, you have forsaken me. Remember he said that in New Testament time? He said, I am not a man, I'm a worm. Creepy, crawly thing that is an abomination. An abomination. Whew, pretty heavy stuff, right? Was the Messiah ever called a worm? He was in Psalms. He called himself that. Pretty heavy stuff, don't you think? So you think maybe Genesis had something to do with Messiah? With his name being there? Being part of this whole story? Of the 70? Fascinating number, by the way. And the next one is Puthah. And it means to splint or to cleave, to break in pieces, to break it apart. So now this worm, something now is going to be broken apart, something's going to be destroyed. Remember Issachar? Got to buy back something you lost. Who lost what? Did Issachar lose something? No. Somebody else lost something. Messiah lost his life. And what happened? He broke into pieces. Remember that his blood on his body was broken and torn apart, torn to pieces. You remember that?
It wasn't broken.
Doesn't say bone. It's cleaved in pieces and broken into pieces. His skin was open and wide open. Ripped to pieces. That's a pretty heavy stuff. Well, splint means it means the same kind of mean. Actually, I think that's a mis. That one someone said it means that, but the rest of them I found out the verb means the other part. To cleave in places and break in pieces. I'm telling you what some say the word means. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't for me, but it's there for you to make your own thinking. And Job, this actually is the word mean. Job, or Job, not Eob, not the one, the book of Job. That's spelt differently, it's pronounced differently, and even looks differently, even close to the same. But it still has the same meaning, one that's been persecuted. Really? One who was, cries out, a shrieking, yelling, out with a horrible yell. What did Messiah sound like when he said what he said? Was he just kind of quiet? Oh God, and no one heard it? No, they heard him yell out. They heard him cry out. It's all still Issachar. I'm going to pay it back. I could pay for your loss. And this is what he's lost. And the other one is Shimron, which means watch and or height. They don't have a good meaning for that one. I don't quite understand that one. Can't get to that one. That's the blood I found. It's kind of left up there in the watch. Height also can mean height too. And Zebulun, now what does that mean? The exalted one. How? A watch may have something to watch how I will pay for your loss, and the Messiah is the exalted one. Okay? The exalted one. How to get exalted? Raised back up from the dead. And the next one is sard, means fear or to tremble. We'll get to that in a minute. And the next one is terebinth or a mighty tree. Now wait a minute, let's backtrack here for just a half a second. What was this again now? Oh, exalted. And then there's fear. The exalted one's going to put fear into people. Simple as that. He's going to be as strong as a mighty tree. And the next name is what? Ya'il. Elohim waits. Remember that? He waits for something. And what she brought out last week is Dina, and that means, her name really means judgment. Not judge, but judgment. Now, we've gone through that before. Right? Got a little more time left? Yes. I'm going to rush through the rest of them real quick. The next name is Gad. Now, this series of names here is from Leah's handmaid. These are the ones that the handmaid bore. But Leah named them all. Well, he's named the sons. And, of course, been translated as Gad, mean a trooper or a troop comes. I mean, what does that mean to you in a literal sense? An army, a captain, somebody in charge. And funny is, the next name is called Zephon. It means one's looking out. He's keeping an eye out. He's watching what's going on. And then it was Haggai, means what? Hold a feast and dance. Wait. The troop's coming, okay? And they have a good lookout. The troop does something, and now everybody gets to dance. However, the next one says, what? Shuni. What does that mean? You get to rest. You'd be quiet. So the army is coming. It's going to be doing something. That is, the Lord's going to come. He's going to do something. And what did he say? Watch. What did Messiah say? Watch, you therefore. You know not when I'm going to come. And general troops going to come unaware. Going down to Zebon means hastening to discern. And it says there, I will be in enlargement. Now, it's, I have unknown, because I have not found, and these are just assumptions with some people that I've come up with. I don't have a real meaning for that word. I couldn't break down the Hebrew word for it. It just doesn't want to break down for me. It's unknown. So, hastening to discern, you're going to make a quick decision, basically. And Eri means to be watchful again, just like the previous name, to be wakened or to wake up, be aware of what's going on. Next one, Arodai, I will subdue or I will roam. Or another translation I found out is, I shall break loose. The next one, line of Elohim. Now, who's the line of Elohim? Oh, I thought it was one of his sons. This guy's not even a Jew. Doesn't have to be a Jew to be a line of God. A Jew is not the line of God. The Messiah is. Got to keep that real clear. Now, next one is Asher. Really strange. Why they use the word happy? You saw that in the translations there? I said, why do they use the word happy for? Because you break down the verb on it, it's nothing about happiness. Leah wrote down here, she said, to be called blessed. What his name really means is to go straight, to go forward, be honest, be honorable, and prosperous. That's what his name really means when you find the verb for it. And they say happy. But when you read what she said, the reason why she said what she said is because I am now blessed. And they turned it into happiness or pleasantness. Okay, we can go a little bit farther than that. He says you can go straight, you can advance, you make progress, and you can set something right, or you can be an upright person. Yes?
Wasn't Asher one of her, Leah's, handmaidens' child?
Yeah, these are... These are Leah's handmaid's kids. The ones for page 4 and 5. I can't remember her name. Is it a phone? I can't remember her name right offhand. They're the handmaid's children. These are descendants of the handmaid children. Leah's handmaid. She had a handmaid, right? And she gave Zilpah, yeah. You got to know there's 4 women involved. Okay. Oh, and then, of course, this is the right-hand man again, another name for right hand. Walking straight, doing something straight, going prop. Now, there is a scripture in the book of either John or maybe it's Matthew or Mark. And it asked about John the Baptist. And he says, make ye straight the pathway to the Lord. Actually, it's the right hand of God making the pathway straight. Okay. Then the next name, Ishua. He will resemble something. I find this fascinating. There's 2 basic meanings to this word. The first one is to agree with or to become like or to make level or to resemble something, somebody. The second meaning is interesting. It means to set up, to set place, and to put things together, putting things together. You take one way or the other. It doesn't matter. But the next name is fascinating. The very next son has a very unusual name. What does it say? He resembles me. Oh. One of them is going to be one that represents it and now comes back and says, this one really resembles me. Who's the me? Who's the me? God. I find that fascinating. And of course, the next one, of course, means with a friend, but defined with a friend. But once again, it's a word that no one really knows what it really came from. The next name, of course, is Sirach. It says, what? Berea, I said, with a friend. But it says, also unknown. That's the definition that someone gave. I have no idea. Really, I couldn't break the word down. Okay? Be honest, I couldn't break it down. But this one had a son. Now, the next name, what does it say in your Bible? It says Sarah. This is not Sarah. This is Sarah. Oh, for some reason your translates it translated as Sarah, and I don't know why, because none is spelt the same. But the verb form of it is basically means the prince that breathes, or prince, some prince breathed, okay? Or basically means to go free, to be unrestrained, to run over. Wow. By the way, that's a woman's name. But it's fascinating how who's going to restrain the Messiah from doing what he has to do?
Nobody.
Nobody. And here's one other one. I don't know what it's in your Hebrew, but Shibbet. I think it says Hever. It's Hever. It means to be a friendship or to fellowship with people, unite, join together, be with one. And the last one in this series, or this lady, is Melchiel. What's Melch? Okay. Edel means God. That's Melchiel. It's got the I there. You see that? That means my king is Elohim. So now we're talking to the creator of heaven, about the creator of heaven and earth. Real quick, it's only 2:30. Bear with me for just a minute. We'll go to Joseph, real simple name. It basically means let him had, or Yahweh will add. Basically simple meaning of that word. And it's Manasseh, and basically it means Elohim causing to forget. Elohim causing him to forget. And that's what Joseph said. And Ephraim, of course, it means the double mount or double portion. It gets twice as much. Then there's Benjamin, son of the right hand. Remember he renamed this one? Son of the right hand. Now he had a son, which really is unusual. Oh, I didn't get that down in Hebrew. Oh my. Melcha, this is on page 6. I didn't get that written down in Hebrew. I can't believe it. It means destruction or swallow up or tear down. Totally, in a sense, to engulf or destroy. The next one, I have a hard one understanding it. Bechor, and young camel. I broke it down. Okay, I cut. Why camel? Then I broke it down what that verb meant. You know the word camel, the verb means to be the firstborn. Isn't that weird? Let me ask you a question. Who is to be the firstborn? From the dead. Correct. He's the firstborn. He is to be the firstborn. Fascinating, isn't it? It doesn't make sense this late in the days you call a son, quote, young camel, which really breaks down to mean to be the firstborn. He's already not the firstborn. The next one is very interesting name. Ashbel means a man of Elohim. I will make a path. And basically in Hebrew it means to flow with like a train on a robe. So a robe was rowing and it's flowing behind him and basically being in charge, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. The next is Gerar, means a grain. And this basically has to connect with the thing of weighing something out. How something, what's the weight of something? Not just a grain of seed, but grain referring to something has to be weighed out. Something is being measured, put it this way. And this, of course, self-explanatory. Rosh means head, or the top, or the beginning of something. The next one's fascinating. Musbin. It's also plural. And I got the questionnaire of serpents, because that's the name for a serpent. All right. What's next? Well, I had to keep breaking it down. The verb means to move to and fro. That's a fascinating phrase, don't you think? You remember during Noah's time, one of the birds he let out, and it went to and fro, to and fro. What does the to and fro mean? Back and forth, no place to go. It also can mean to wave. Gonna get past this thing real quick. It's almost 2:30. Do I stop at 2:30? Or is that time off? Anyway, the next one is a very unusual word. Chufin. It basically means to protect or a covering. Something being covered over, something being protected. He's going to do some protecting. And the last one, of course, it says, I shall subdue. Dan. Why, those last series was a series of Rachel's kids. Now, the next one is Rachel's handmaid. Now, Don, it's Dan, right? Is that self-explanatory? It means a judge, right? Not too hard to figure it out. And the next, he only had one son. Did you notice the name of that son? Unusual name. He who makes haste. The judge is not going to delay his decision. He's going to do it quick and fast. No delaying on the court. No lawyer there to give a briefing. My decision, the judge is finished, is now, and that's it. Now, last one is Naphtali. It's an odd name, right? What's Naphtali? Well, yes, it means wrestling. It also means my strife. Yes. He had a son. Remember, my strife, my wrestling. What's happening? Ya'zil, ya'zil. Now, basically means God divides. Or whom Elohim allots. Doesn't mean to divide it into two, though it can mean to divide it into two, or cut it down, or cut it short. But it's more of a connection with God has an allotment. He's going to allow this, and that's it. That's the decision making that God is going to do. That makes sense to you? Odd names. And we have a thinking, well, the only reason why they use God's name is because, well, everybody did. That was the kosher thing to do. Before kosher came into existence. I just find that going through this chapter and these names, why did God list them so many times in this order? I really don't have a full answer to everything. I just want you to look at the names. You got the piece of paper now, and you can research them, do it yourself. You may don't have to do it. You can throw the stuff away. It doesn't make a difference to me. And the next one is Gunin, means my defender, or to defend or to cover or to surround. And Zivrar, he forms. This is a very fascinating thing. He forms. And it got down there. It's a framer, one that has a purpose, one who's doing a framework. Is this guy did it because that's what he did for a living? Well, sometimes as human beings we read it, he says, oh, that's what he did, that's what God named him. That's what he did. Right, God named him. Who's doing the framing work? Yes. This is the actions of what God does. Not necessarily in specific order. That's not what this story is about, in necessary order or process of time. It's this is what the descendants of Leah. These are the names I want you to know and understand from her. It's about me. Oh, over here is the phone. These are the names of this lady that I have here. It's not about her. It's about me. Oh, here's Rachel. No, yeah, okay. Yeah, this is the kid she had. This is not about, it's about me, who I am, what I am doing. And Bella, oh, Dan, oh, well, this is about me. This is what I'm doing. It's not necessarily in chronological order. It's not an order of how he's going to do something in preciseness. It's just telling us what he does. Does it make sense to you? And the last one, of course. Shalim. Repaid. You remember way back Issachar? He will be paid for what he lost. The last name in the entire cyst. He's going to recompense. He's going to pay. He's going to make payment. And I put there, because I saw this in a fascinating research, to be in a covenant of peace. To be at peace. Last name. An entire series. I found it fascinating. A covenant of peace. Now I'm going to ask you a question. Is the New Testament a covenant of peace between you and your Creator? Yes, it is. Does this not tell you the end? In the very beginning, the last name, we went through all these names laboriously, 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 boringly, boringly, boringly. And the last name says, oh, I'm going to make a covenant. And it's going to be between me and you. And it's going to be a covenant of peace. No more anger, no more frustration. I'm not going to remember anything anymore about your past. I'm not going to remember what's going on. It'll be all gone. Don't you find it fascinating? This very last name, this series, told you the end. And he says, I'll make this covenant with all mankind. What did Yeshua say? Not John Baptist said, behold, the one that takes away the sins of the world. Yes.
All right, two things. Don't forget to tell us about why Ur and Onan went into.
Okay.
And my second quick comment is, all of these words and definitions, maybe not in one order, end up with the very last word.
Very
peace.
Last word. I just find that fascinating. Now, to explain a little bit, we have to go, actually, next chapter, we'll explain more in detail of what Egypt was all about. You remember that when God told, this particular chapter, God told Jacob, go. Leave the land of Canaan. You're going to go into a, where? Into a new land. All right? So, we have here the land of Goshen, which is an unidentified word. And people are trying to guess at what that word really means. It does not seem to be a negative word. It has to do association with Arab in relation with someone doing labor, doing work. And the other one is unknown. And it's a very mysterious word. But what happens to the rest of the house of Israel from this point on when Jacob went in? Where did they enter into? Where? They're in Goshen. Goshen represents something. What does Goshen represent? Egypt, enemy, the world, nasty people, way of life.
Fertility.
What?
Fertility.
Fertility, all right. So what?
Protection.
Who took care of them in the land of Goshen?
Egypt.
No! Joseph! The son of the living God. They're in the kingdom of God. It's a picture of moving out of this world and moving into a whole new world where there is peace. Where there is substance of tranquility with God. And God provides, because Joseph was told to provide for all those 70 people plus more as they kept multiplying. He was a second man in command of everything. You understand what I'm saying? It's like moving into, even those who were dead, get to be moved into the world of the living. And they become strong. They become bold. They become like you, when the apostle, but in the book of Hebrews says, now that the Holy of Holies has been, well, the curtain been torn down, what does he say? Run. Get away. Don't enter.
Go in.
How? Boldly. Yeah. Boldly. With bravery, with courage, with confidence. Not in yourself, but that God is going to take care of you because that's where God's home is at. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? Yes.
I have a question about the last verse. It said that Egypt, the Egyptians were into cattle, and they hated the shepherd. The shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians.
Can anyone explain to her when I explained that word? What does that tell you? First time I ever showed up in the Bible is right there. Has nothing to do with sexual conduct. Has nothing to do with animals. Has to do with the people. What is it that they, what is he, Joseph, saying? Yes.
Well, one thing is that when sheep go through a place, they eat it down all the way to the nubs and leave nothing left. That's why you have to rotate them so often. Whereas cows, when they eat, they still leave the roots of the leaves, so they come back. So there's always arguing between cattlemen and shepherds. You go out to like the Midwest, Wyoming, Montana, those areas where there's a lot of that. You see it all the time.
So the Egyptians are seeing the Hebrews, understand that word, destroying their land. It's not just a shepherd, because Egyptians had goats, they had sheep, they had cattle like anybody else did. And we later on, you'll find out, we'll get here. The Pharaoh says to Joseph, by the way, have them take care of my cattle, my goats, my sheep. Have them take care of them. If it's an abomination for Pharaoh to have a, quote, shepherd, why did he have to have shepherds take care of his sheep? Was it really an abomination? Not with Pharaoh.
You understand what I'm saying? Pharaoh is a picture of somebody else.
The house of Israel, even today, spiritually speaking, is an abomination to the world. The world doesn't like the house of Israel, whether it's spiritual or real. Take any interpretation you wish. But the Apostle Paul says we are once not part of, but now we are part of something called the house of Israel. What does the name Israel mean? What does the name Israel mean? What? Prince of God, a prince like God, would mean you have power, strength. What kind of strength is Jacob, who was called that, or to be called that, why would God call him that for? Because that's what kind of man he was? No, what he's going to do. And then there's sometimes in Scripture it says the sons of Israel, and then they say the sons of Jacob. The sons of Israel are different people than the sons of Jacob. Because we are so earthly. We think earthly. We think blood and guts. We think sex this, sex that, sex this, sex that. But spiritually speaking, that's not what's talking about. Apostle Paul said, you are of the house of Israel. How did you become one? By the will and power and might of God himself. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, the world, what did Jesus say to his brothers? When they go on the Feast of Tabernacles. The world hates me, they love you. Wait. We're talking the Feast of Tabernacles? We're talking the Feast of what? We're talking about the Feast of God? At the Feast of God? He says, the world loves you, and they don't love me. I'm not going, because where you're going to the Feast of Shavuot. By the way, they hate me. You mean the assembly of God in Jerusalem, who keep the Torah? Who keep all the holy days? Who keep the Sabbath? Who keep kosher food? Or what? The world. Uh-oh. So when God wants you to tabernacle with him, is he meaning he wants a tabernacle with you, or him or you with him, based in a physical location that the world puts together? No. The reason why most of you probably never ever looked at yourself as being an abomination to somebody else. Once they get to know who you are, what you believe, what you're walking through, how you live, what do? They don't like you. They stay away from you. You're a plague. You're a disease. You're going to pollute my children to not keep Christmas anymore. How ugly are you anyway? You mean you're going to take away the bunny with the eggs? You're corrupt. I don't do those things and you're blaming me. Get out of my life. I don't ever see you again. Have you ever had relatives, close relatives that you loved and they loved you, all of a sudden nothing to do with you because you have brought forth an abomination to them. Now, why is that such a shock? What should shepherds do? They should take care of the flock. Yes or no? Now, you have to take care of that flock based upon the word of Devarim Elohim. When you take care of that flock, by the way, word of Devarim Elohim, those others are going to say, no, you don't take care of my kid that way. You don't take care of my son. You don't take my grandkid. I don't want them in your house. You got these ungodly things in there. In fact, there's nothing there godly. It's ungodly. Do you ever feel that way? Have you ever been attacked that way? Spiritually speaking, maybe, or physically speaking. I hate to tell you this for a lot of you. Maybe you never realized that when you are confronted with somebody and you try to convince them, and with all your heart, with all your mind, all your soul, with everything in you, for them to just read what it says, and you point out this is what it says, what are they going to do? Oh, give you great embracement and give you a big hug and give you thank you for letting me know the truth. No, they don't.
No, they get mad.
They attack you.
Yes.
You become an abomination to them. Why is that such a bad thing to be an abomination? Abomination to God is one thing. Be abomination to mankind is... What did they call Yahshua? Lord of the what? The house, the flies, dunghill. Lord of the crap pile. I mean, when they call me that, what do you think they call you? Now, would you think that Yeshua, during the time in his teaching, he's been walking this earth, that he was blessed by the Sanhedrin?
No.
Or was he considered an abomination?
Yes.
What else is new? So, when you look at this in the book of, we're talking Genesis. Genesis is a very important place where that showed up for the first time. And not talking about creepy, crawly things. He's not talking about a pig. He's not talking about a rabbit. He's not talking about a spider. He's not talking about a squid. He's talking about the sons of Israel. If you understand what I meant by that phrase, then you understand. It's not the sons of Jacob. It's the sons of Israel, which we are now part of that household.
Hallelujah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Well, I would take that to the New Testament where it says the carnal mind is enmity against God who can know it. So to me, Egypt and cattle represents the world and the shepherd represents my,
right.
My Messiah.
Remember, it was an abomination to the Egyptians. But they didn't live. They lived in a land called Goshen, which has a hard time to find out what that word means. All right, I wore you out. That's it for 46th chapter. I hope you had some. These just names. I know this. And when God lists these 70 days, that's one interesting thing. I said there that Leah, there was 33. Well, I counted them as 34. I don't know why they didn't count that number. Why isn't it 34? But maybe one of them they didn't want to count. And more than likely, you know, it says, these are the sons and daughters, which would include Dina. Yes?
And why they were included?
Were they what?
They were included.
Yeah. Why?
Er and Onan. They were...
The two dead men? Why were they included?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me get back to you again. This is picturing the land of Goshen, not the land of Egypt. The land of Goshen. And the land of Goshen is where Joseph took care of, quote, the sun, the moon, and the stars. You remember that dream? He didn't take care of them in the land of Canaan. Firstborn son. God caused me to forget the land of Canaan and my people. So, as we continue on with the story, we'll see the next few chapters. We're seeing that Joseph, who represents the Messiah, he is now the ultimate protector, provider. And there, his family, all these 70 at this point in time, picturing something different, the sons of Israel. We don't look at the two dead men as the sons of Israel, because we already have condemned them, haven't we? We've already judged them because God killed them. Therefore, they did something they should not have done, and God just killed them. They did what's called evil or bad things, and God just killed them. Why did he kill some of the other sons? They did bad things too. Why did he kill Judah? He should just kill Judah, right? He sold his brother. Why did he just kill him? Not like our wisdom. So the dead men get raised up in the house of Israel. Not the house of Jacob. Jacob, the house of Jacob is dying if it's not already dead. The new covenant is with the house of Israel. I'm all speaking on, of course, relationship to God and the new covenant. So, is there hope for somebody? Some kid, we don't know how old it was. We don't know how old those two guys were. They did something that displeased God. And how come he didn't kill David? Why didn't he just kill David? That's beside the point. Why didn't he kill him? He did an abomination, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Interesting. Your point, the fact that if Goshen is a picture of the land we're going to enter, or the resurrected land, or the land of God, that there's two witnesses of it.
Okay.
There were two men killed, not just one.
Oh, so when we're looking at it, you can look at that point. I have hope for all these people, and I really do. I think they and the two sons of Jacob, Judah, will survive the death penalty. That is the final death penalty. They have to be woken up and told. You think they knew? No, they didn't. Their father didn't even know. If we continue on in Genesis, you'll find out the father's still questioning the wisdom. Joseph, you really, Joseph, are you going to get vengeance? And Joseph is the one that cried. He's the one that cried. They didn't. Fascinating, don't you think? We'll get there at the end of the chapter, end of the book. But you understand, in the very beginning, God said, in the beginning I created heaven and earth. Because he started out that way. He has not yet completed his task. What did Yeshua say about the Sabbath? Here do my Father work, and I also work on the Sabbath. What is he doing that for? Shouldn't he be stoned to death? Why? Was Jesus a man? Yes or no?
Yes.
Then he should be stoned. Because he's working. He came and called himself the Son of Man. He never said the word Son of God unless they specifically asked the question. Then he said, well, yes, that's what you say. That's what it is. It's very important he had to call himself Son of Man because it really is about man. Read about you, about me, about mankind. He actually did come from a womb. A feminine womb. He actually was born. Okay? Like any other human being.